The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 7, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 20th, 2007, in Sydney, Australia.
Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. The word śrajāmi is significant herein. śrajāmi cannot be used in the sense of creation, because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body, since all of the forms are eternally existent. Therefore, śrajāmi means that the Lord manifests Himself as He is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely at the end of the Dwarpa Yuga, the 28th millennium of the 7th month, in one day of Ma, He has no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations, because He is completely free to act in many ways at His will. He therefore appears by His own will, whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. In the Bhagavatam it is said that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Only the Lord can manufacture a system religion. The Vedas are also accepted as originally spoken by the Lord Himself to Brahma from within His heart. And therefore, the principles of dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of God, dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto Him only, and nothing more. The Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto Him, and whenever such principles are disturbed by the demonic, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna, who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the pretext of the authority of the Vedas. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demonic tendency still took to animal sacrifice without reference to the Vedic principles. Lord Buddha appeared to stop this nonsense and to establish the Vedic principles of nonviolence. Therefore, each and every avatar or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission, and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless he is referred to by the scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only on Indian soil. He can manifest Himself anywhere and everywhere and whenever He desires to appear. In each and every incarnation, He speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under their particular circumstances. But the mission is the same: to lead people to God consciousness and obedience to the principles of religion. Sometimes He descends personally, and sometimes He sends His bona fide representative in the form of His son or servant or Himself in some disguised form. The principles of the Bhagavad Gita were spoken to Arjuna, and for that matter to other highly elevated persons, because he was highly advanced compared to ordinary persons in other parts of the world. 2 plus 2 equals 4 is a mathematical principle that is true both in the beginner's arithmetic class and in the advanced class as well. Still, there are higher and lower mathematics. In all incarnations of a Lord, therefore, the same principles are taught, but they appear to be higher and lower in varied circumstances. The higher principles of religion begin with the acceptance of the four orders and the four statuses of social life, as will be explained later. The whole purpose of the mission of incarnations is to arouse Krishna consciousness everywhere. Such consciousness is manifest and non-manifest only under different circumstances. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Pada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. So, just as the Father is always very kindly disposed to his children, even the ones that run away from home and become rascals. In the same way, Lord Krishna is very, very kind to us. Even though we reject it foolishly, he remains our well-wisher. And he undertakes so many different arrangements just to try to save us from our suffering condition in the cycle of repeated birth and death. How much Krishna loves us. We don't even understand how much he loves us. We can't even conceive of how much he loves us. Beyond our conceptual ability to actually understand how much Krishna loves us. But one thing we can do, and that is we can take advantage of that. He wants us to take advantage. He's offering us amnesty. They who have been rebelling against me for millions of lifetimes, envious of me, dividing me. But that's all right. I will forgive you. You simply have to surrender to me. Lay down your rebellious attitude. Surrender. I forgive. Forgive and forget all of it. You can come back and be with me in my eternal kingdom. We have to try to comprehend who is Krishna and what is his love for us. We really have to try to understand that. Because if we don't, we remain carried away by the modes of material nature, running into sense gratification. Superficial existence. Who wants to be superficial? Where everything is irrelevant. There was a popular song in the 60s like that. It's called The Dangling Conversation. That everything was really meaningless, but they had this conversation that kind of hung there, like, with no meaning. It's just dangling there in a state of meaninglessness. So who wants to have a life that's dangled in meaninglessness? Where you just, like the existentialist philosophers say, you just invent some meaning to life. But that raises a question. Why would you want to invent some meaning for life, sir? If it has no meaning, where from the desire to have it, for it to have meaning come? We can challenge these existentialist philosophers who say that actually life has no meaning, that you have to invent some meaning to get through it. It doesn't make sense. If life didn't have any meaning, you wouldn't have to invent some kind of a meaning. You wouldn't need even a false sense of meaning if it didn't have meaning. The fact that we want that life should have some meaning is the proof it does have meaning. Now we simply have to find out what is the actual meaning. But they don't teach that in the school. When I got to college, that was what I wanted to know. What's the meaning of life? They asked me, what do you want to major in? But my position was, how can I know what I want to major in when I don't even know who I am? First tell me who I am, then ask me what I want to major in. Majoring in this or that, that's irrelevant if you don't even know the purpose of existence. But these so-called professors, they themselves don't know. So how they can enlighten students? Therefore, if you actually want to know the meaning and purpose of existence, guru is required. You must have guru. Guru means that person who is a living embodiment of the Vedic wisdom. Some people say, why don't I need guru? I'll just study the Vedas. But the Vedas without a guru are like a vast ocean. You'll never be able to figure out how to put them into practice. Because there's so many recommendations in the Vedas for this thing, that thing. To understand what is the actual essence of Vedas, that requires guru. You'll never figure it out on you. What is the essence? Even Vyasadeva, who compiled all the Vedas, he was confused and bewildered to understand what's the purpose of the Vedas. Even he was the compiler of the Vedas. He didn't even understand what was going on. Can you imagine? If Veda Vyas didn't even understand what's the purpose of all this Vedic knowledge, the compiler himself, then what is our position? It's only when he took shelter of the lotus feet of his Guru Maharaj, Sri Narad Muni, it was only then that he understood, yes, the essence of the Vedas is to be Krishna conscious. And that's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Vedaishcha saravayaham eva vedyo vedanta krit vedavid eva chaham Krishna. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna is the perfect. He is the source of all Vedic wisdom. It's all come from him and it all goes back to him. Those who have actually understood the Vedic wisdom, they surrender the lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna. So the bona fide spiritual man, he trained the disciple how to do that. He simply trained the disciple how to completely take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He has no other business. So, if we are blessed by the association of the bona fide spiritual man, and we are blessed by the contact with the direct words of God, Lord Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and we can have complete faith in the words of Guru and in the words of Krishna, and then it is confirmed in the Svetashvatara Upanishad, chapter number 6, text number 23. Yasya deve para bhakti tata deve tata guru tasyaite ketatavyata prakashante mahatmana. Unto those souls and only unto those souls who have unflinching faith in the words of the spiritual master in Krishna, only unto them are the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. So it is only through that channel, Guru Krishna channel, that you will actually understand what's going on in the Vedic system. Otherwise, you're bewildered, just like Veda Vyasa is bewildered. You remain bewildered to understand what is the Vedic system about. But by that faith in the words of Sri Guru and Sri Krishna, especially Bhagavad Gita, by that unflinching faith in their words, and everything will become crystal clear to you. Everything will be understood. Gyanena tu tada gyanam yesham madhitsyam vajugyanam. Tesham madhitsyam, what is it? Gyanena tu tada gyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham madhitsyam vajugyanam prakashayati tatpadam. When one is enlightened by that knowledge, when one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then everything becomes revealed to him, just as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. In the dark night, especially when you're out in the countryside, away from the city lights, like in Govinda Valley, for example, in the dark night, you cannot see anything. But when that sun comes up over the mountain, then you can see everything. So, when one actually is blessed with that transcendental vision, known as Krishna consciousness, then you can understand everything about everything. Nothing will remain unknown to you. Everything will make perfect sense. You will be able to see everything in relationship with Krishna. Because you will see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. This is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti pareshanu boro bhavo varaktir nanyat vichai shakrakuti. Bhakti pareshana bhavaraktir anyatra chaisha trika eka kala tapanyamanashi yatasmanashi tushti tushti purusha shurupayo nagasam. Those who become totally absorbed in devotional service, completely dedicated in the process of bhakti, they experience three things. Love for Krishna. They feel love for Krishna because they understand how much Krishna is giving them love at every minute. So naturally, if you can feel how someone is loving you, if you have any sensitivity whatsoever, you will want to love that person in return. It's a natural sentiment. So they develop feelings of love for Krishna and direct perception of Krishna. They gradually, as they become more and more Krishna conscious, they can see Krishna, they can hear Krishna, they can experience Krishna in everything and everything within Krishna. And the third symptom is they become free of all material attachment. Once you get a taste for Krishna consciousness, there is nothing of this world that will attract you. If you want to know if you're advancing in Krishna consciousness, just compare how much you're attracted to Krishna and how much you're attracted to Maya. When you're going down the street, are you attracted by the flickering neon of this material existence? Does the razzle-dazzle of the material energy baffle you? You see, then you're not very advanced in Krishna consciousness. If you're actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, you just see it as some pale, insignificant glitter. That's all. As compared to the unlimitedly beautiful effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one loses attraction for this material existence. Except it does have one attraction. You know what that attraction is? That it's a wonderful opportunity to serve Krishna. When a preacher comes into a city like Sydney, he goes, wow, this is wonderful. There's so many people here. There's so much wealth here. There's so much opulence. This can all be used for Srila Prabhupada's mission. You see? Wherever a traveling preacher goes, he thinks, this is wonderful. Whatever facility, he always sees, this is a wonderful facility. This can be used for Krishna. So that is the attraction. To use everything for Krishna. Devotee has no desire to enjoy anything for himself. His enjoyment is to engage everything in the service of Krishna. He may say, but can't I just have a little enjoyment? Just a little bit. A devotee of the Lord doesn't even want a little pinch of enjoyment. Because he knows the more I give enjoyment to Krishna, the more I get actual enjoyment. And the more I try to sneak out a little bit of enjoyment for myself, the less I actually become happy. So one who is actually realized in Krishna consciousness, he wants to completely kick out even the most subtle desire to enjoy from his heart. He wants to kick it out as hard as he can, as fast as he can. Get the hell out of here. He simply wants to be completely absorbed. Ahaitaki apratiyata yayatma supersediti. Bhagavatam says that devotional service must be unmotivated. That means there's no hidden agenda up your sleeve. It's simply for the pleasure of Krishna. Not like that popular song. You know that song? Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jai Ji Krishna. You see, and I'm not picking on the Hindus. Everyone does it, you know. The Christians do it, the Muslims, the Jews, the Sikhs. Everybody goes to the church, the synagogue, the temple, the mosque. They got their shopping list. You know. Dear God, give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. Give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. But you know what? It's stupid. When you were a kid growing up in your parents' house, did you have to say, Mommy and Daddy, will you feed me today? Even in a poor person's home, the parents will make sure the kids are fed, even if they're poor. So do you think Krishna is poor? Do you think you have to beg Krishna? We had an experience at our Namahat Center in Austin. The Indian students would come once a year to our program just as the fall semester began at school. That was it. They were coming to pray for a good grade. That's all. Once a year. This is not Krishna consciousness. This is not religion, actually. Religion, do you know the word religion comes from the Latin religare? You know, religare means to reconnect. You don't reconnect with God by flattering Him and asking Him for material things. That's not how you reconnect with God. If you want to reconnect with God, then you have to find out what He wants. My dear Lord, what do you want me to do for you? Even in ordinary morality, this principle is taught. In the U.S., there was one famous president, John F. Kennedy. And in his famous State of the Union address, he had spoke to the American nation. He gave an instruction to the American nation, which is very much appreciated all over the world. He said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country." So why are we going to Krishna and saying, "My dear Lord, what you can do for me?" That's not even on the level of what Kennedy was teaching to the American citizen. That's even lower level when Kennedy was teaching to the U.S. citizen. Ask not what Krishna can do for you, but ask what you can do for Krishna. That is Krishna bhakti. Otherwise, it's simply business. A business deal. I will flatter you, and what will you give me if I flatter you? See? You can get a few cheap trinkets by doing that. There's no doubt. The Lord says, all right. The thief, he goes to the church, he says, "My dear Lord, please bless me. I can successfully rob a home this evening." And the house owner, he also goes, "My dear Lord, please protect my home from the thieves." And somehow God has to fulfill everyone's desire. Prabhupada actually told us in Atlanta, he said, God is perplexed. He gets all these conflicting desires from all these different people. And somehow he has to balance it all out. But the real thing is, what Krishna really wants to hear is that person who says, "My dear Lord, I surrender myself fully unto you. Please instruct me what I am to do with my eternal existence in your service." You see, Krishna is waiting. And you know what? When you take that position of complete surrender to the will of the Lord, complete total surrender, Krishna becomes your personal property. Do you think you could be lacking in anything? If that person who controls and owns everything in the totality of existence is your personal property? Krishna says, Ananyaschintayantamam tesham yajanapriyapasate tesham mitsvayuktanam yogachemam vahamyam. For those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I provide whatever they are lacking. That person who is completely, totally submitted to Krishna cannot be lacking in anything material or spiritual. Whatever he needs to serve Krishna will be provided personally by Krishna. So why are we praying for this thing? We should simply pray for bhakti. And what is the best prayer for achieving bhakti?
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
If we will pray every day, we recommend you all have the japa mala beads. And every day you should chant at least 16 times around these beads, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because this is praying to the Lord to please engage you in this pure devotional service. This is putting you in the proper frame of mind so that you can see that everything that exists in the world is Krishna. It's not yours. Nothing belongs to us. Everything is the property of God. We have to see that and we have to act in that consciousness. We shouldn't be lusty, greedy, angry, illusion, mad, or envious. We should see everything as the property of the Lord and use everything in His service. And if we do, He will give us all facility. We won't have to struggle in anxiety. How am I going to make ends meet? Then our only anxiety will be how we can save the people who are suffering without Krishna consciousness. That will be our only anxiety. So Krishna has appeared for that purpose. And if we assist Him in this mission of delivering those who are in the state of illusion, and He will give us unlimited blessings. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. Question? Anyone question? So, yeah. You may have to be my hearing aid. You can come tell me in the right ear. That's, yeah, that's good. Get it directly. Now you have to think, how can I best be engaged in Krishna's service? That's what you have to think. What's the best thing for my Krishna consciousness? If I give all my money away and I'm having to camp out in the park across the street here with no place to live, that may not be the best thing for my spiritual life. So you have to say that everything belongs to Krishna doesn't mean you have to give it all away. It just means you have to use all of it in a way which facilitates, gives the best facility for you to be Krishna conscious. That's what it means. We don't say you have to give everything away and become a Naga Baba, you know. I can't even have any clothes because everything belongs to Krishna. It's become Naga Baba. No, utilize everything in such a way that best facilitates your being Krishna conscious and best facilitates you being in a position where you can make the whole world Krishna conscious. That's what you should. So when in doubt, you ask the spiritual master. That's all. You describe your specific situation. You should take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And he will tell you exactly what you should do. How much money you should keep, how much you should donate. He'll tell you exactly what you should do. So that you can maximize your own position for becoming, you know, fixed nicely and peacefully and happily in Krishna consciousness throughout your whole life. Very nice question. Any other questions? Yeah. Come over here. And yeah. Special program for the hard of hearing speakers, you see. Let everyone hear it too.
While reading Bhagavad Gita in a poem that's got Achetya Ayam, Achetya Ayam, Adatya Ayam, Akletya Asosya Ayam.
This summary is poeticized in Indian language, or is this the Sanskrit?
Bhagavad Gita.
You're giving me the Sanskrit?
Sanskrit.
Okay. All right.
Soul cannot be destroyed by anything. Okay. Soul cannot be burned. Soul is valuable in anything.
Right.
Soul exists everywhere, all pervasive.
Yeah.
Soul is eternal, all pervasive. Soul is not, cannot be changed, modified.
Okay. No. Your soul is only all-pervading within your body. But the principle of soul is all-pervading because there are souls everywhere. But your soul is not all-pervading. That is only true of the Paramatma.
because in this poem, the Nitya Sarvadana, Sarvadana means always everywhere.
Yeah, that the soul in general, yes, because there are souls everywhere. It doesn't mean you're, doesn't, it's not saying that your individual soul is all pervading. No, soul, the principle of soul is all pervading, not the individual soul.
Yeah, because my consciousness, if supreme soul is all pervading, and even my soul is all pervading, then, you know.
Well, the easy way to understand things is to take it in the context of the other verses. These verses are all spoken in context of the other verses. If you will take everything in context, then you won't be confused. The fact is that the soul is all-pervading because everywhere there are souls. Even the atoms have little jivas in them. So, but the each individual soul is localized. He is not all-pervading. Yes, you don't. Your soul doesn't become manifest all over the universe when you leave your body. No.
So no. It is not.
That's the Mayavada idea. That you become the super soul when you,
yeah,
you know.
That,
no, you don't.
That was my question. What
the individual soul never becomes the super soul. The individual consciousness never becomes the supreme consciousness.
Okay.
He always remains the part and parcel. Is that clear to everyone? This is a very important distinction. Any other questions? Is everyone's nicely fixed in spiritual life now? Okay.
If someone is poor, their only aim is to actually accumulate wealth. That being the case, how can we actually attract them towards?
So how can the poor people be? How can the poor people be Krishna conscious? Actually, everyone is poor in this world. I think even Mr. Bill Gates is a poor man.
Okay, let me be more specific. People who are actually struggling even to meet their basic needs, I call them as poor.
Yeah. Actually, in Vedic culture, there's no such thing as poor men because the government makes sure that everyone has nice economic situation. In Vedic culture, there is no poverty. Everyone is nicely fed. They have feeding all of you. You are sitting dumb, but these two are getting all the mercy. Question at a time here. What question do you want me to answer first?
The question is more or less, why is there nothing in this world? Why is God, why is everything there actually?
Why does everything
that
exist?
The reason for existence of
what is the reason for the existence of everything?
Yes.
Yes, that is very simple. Actually, everything exists for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is for Krishna's enjoyment. You ask, why does Krishna exist? Krishna manifests his own existence out of himself for the fun of it. Did you know that? Krishna is called Rama, the supreme enjoyer. Krishna exists for the sheer fun of existing, because he wants to exist. And to increase his own pleasure. How many friends do you have? 50 or 100. Isn't it nice to have one friend, another friend? The more you can have friends, the more your happiness grows, isn't it? Yes. So the same thing applies with God. To increase his own enjoyment, he expands from himself millions and billions, indeed an infinite number of jivas. He expands from himself for the purpose of enjoying individual relationships with each of them, and to become even more enjoyable. He also expands from himself an infinite number of persons who are also God. So you can enjoy associating with them too. They are called Vishnu Tattva expansions. He has the Vishnu Tattva expansions and the Jiva Tattva expansions. He expands all these infinite number of Vishnu Tattvas and Jiva Tattvas from himself simply for the purpose of enjoying rasa or sweet relationship with each and every one of them. So you exist at this very second. I'm not talking about your body. I'm talking about the spirit soul. You, the Atma, exist at this very second because Krishna is emanating you from himself right now. You exist simply because Krishna is emanating you from himself. And he's doing that because he wants to enjoy a particular relationship that only you can give him. Have you ever seen snow? Snowflakes? Yes. Every snowflake is completely unique. There are no two snowflakes that are exactly the same. And if you look under a microscope, you will see they're very, very beautiful. They're full of beauty. So, just as there's an infinite number of snowflakes, all amazingly dazzlingly beautiful, yeah. So there's an infinite number of living beings who are so incredibly beautiful, and each one is unique. And Krishna enjoys a particular type of relationship or flavor or taste from that particular jiva, which no other jiva can give him. So if you do not surrender to Krishna, you're cheating him out of your association. And you'll never be happy if you do that. So you exist simply for the purpose of giving a certain type of happiness to God that no one else can give him. Only you can give it to him. That's why you exist. Next question. Actually, there is nothing. The problem is our vision is material. That's the problem. Due to being covered by the six enemies, the lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy, our vision has become material. Actually, there is nothing material. Everything is spiritual, but when your eyes are covered by lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy, then you see it as material. It is all the energy of God. It is all meant to be used in His service. But when you see it as your property with lusty eyes, then that is material. Yes, Krishna is Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna is described by Brahmaji as being the cause of all causes. That is Krishna. Ishvara, you know that shloka? Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Satchirananda Vigraha Anadira Dir Govinda Sarvakarma Karanam. It is stated by Ramana, Krishna is the karma. He has no origin, Anadir. And he is the origin, Adir. And he is called also Govinda. He has an eternal form, Satchirananda Vigraha, full of knowledge and wisdom. And Ishvaraha Paramaha Krishna. That Krishna is the Supreme Control. That is stated by him. No, it's a very nice question. It really exists because it's too pleasurable. Next question. Are there days when you feel to remain always Krishna conscious? If I'm going up and down, sometimes I'm Krishna conscious and sometimes I'm not Krishna conscious. This means that I am still under the influence of the modes of material nature. So the process of getting out of these modes of material nature is called sadhana. It is described by Rupa Goswami, the process of sadhana. And the first step is to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. The second step is to take diksha and to receive instruction. And then the third step, of course, is logical. He's instructed you, then you must obey his instruction. So the third step is you follow the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master. The fourth step is you learn from the Guru how to follow the pathway chalked out by the great acharyas. You learn how to follow the pathway of the very great acharyas. And the fifth step is you inquire from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we will seriously adopt these principles, especially these first five principles inside of the Bhakti given by the spiritual master. Then you will find that you become very steady and fixed in your practice of Krishna consciousness. Basically, in short, if you're feeling up and down, it means you're not deep enough in the ocean of bhakti. On the surface of the ocean, you feel the influence of the waves, up and down. If you go deep within the ocean, there's no more influence of the waves. So now, you're just... your Krishna consciousness is too shallow. It's not deep enough. Therefore, you're feeling the influence of the waves. But if you go deep, deep, deep into the ocean of bhakti, then you will no longer feel the influence of the waves. You will become very strong and very steady. The Guru will take you there. That's why Guru is with me. He will take you deep within that ocean. Any other questions? So, this will be the last one. You know, everyone has to get up in the morning as early as possible and chant 16 good rounds.
My question was, being something imperfect,
yes. If your senses are imperfect, then how you can choose the perfect spiritual master? Your senses are imperfect. Well, one thing, you just let him choose you. That's the easy way. If the spiritual master is perfect, you just let him choose you. If I'm imperfect and the spiritual master is perfect, then what's the problem? Just take the instruction. Say, Guruji, tell me what to do. I'm under your direction now. If you have found the perfect spiritual master, then your imperfections are not a problem. You just obey his instruction and you become perfect immediately. What is the difficulty? Is there any difficulty? You have no difficulty? All right, well, that's one more question. You didn't understand? What is the confusion? You're saying, well, if I'm imperfect, then how will I find the perfect spiritual master? If the perfect spiritual master finds you, then your problem is solved. Yes, that is it. So, another way is you study the revealed scriptures and find out, just like you want to go to the university. There are many diploma, what are called diploma mills out there on the internet nowadays. You see, they say, send us $500, we'll make you a PhD. It's useless. It's simply garbage, right? So how do you know what is a bona fide university and what isn't? You have to be fortunate to know the difference. Just like if you want to be a gold merchant, for example, you have to be fortunate to have been trained to be able to tell the difference between real gold and false gold. Otherwise, if you don't have that knowledge and you go to the market and you say, well, I'd like to become a gold merchant, you go to some wholesaler, you say, I'd like to be a gold merchant, and here I've saved up $10,000. I want some gold. He says, oh. And if you don't know what you're doing, you'll get ripped off. You see? So you really require, you have to be fortunate to somehow have gotten the proper information from somebody who didn't cheat you. Otherwise, you're in trouble. That's why we're distributing Prabhupada's books everywhere. Because here is the actual information that you can tell the difference between a bona fide spiritual master and a charlatan. It's very easy to find a guru who can take your money. But it's very difficult to find a guru who can take away your anxiety. Actually, if you simply study our prayers that we sing every morning at Mangalarti, do you come for Mangalarti every day? Just study the translation through the Vastakam, and you'll know what is a bona fide spiritual master. The bona fide guru, he is like a rain cloud of mercy. Right now, our hearts are burning with lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy. We're being devoured in this forest fire of material consciousness. For the spiritual master, he comes to us like a cloud of mercy. He just showers his mercy upon us, and we feel how all that anxiety is going away. He extinguishes that blazing fire within our heart. If you will carefully study, simply carefully study the Gavastakam prayer, then you will understand what is a perfect spiritual master. And then you can surrender his lotus feet. Is there any difficulty? So, on that note, a positive note, that there is no difficulty. We will stop and continue on tomorrow morning. Srimad Bhagavatam class at 6:30 a.m. Everyone be here who can possibly make it. Raja Vidra Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.